walk alone. Step by step,
step by step,
step by step,
I'm on the road
to recovery, trusting God along the way, trusting God along the way, trusting God all the way.
Welcome to the Fort Lauderdale Primary Purpose Big Book Study Group's Thursday night Alcoholics and God Speaker Step Series. I am a recovered alcoholic. My name is Stephanie. Thanks for joining us tonight. In a minute, we're going to start our two-minute meditation. So please take a moment to get situated. Please turn off all devices that make noise and will distract others. Take this time to get connected to God. Let the craziness of the day drift away and ask God to help you stay focused on the step study tonight. Is everybody ready? So let's start the meditation. Next, we'll read the Foglight Prayer. If you don't know it, there are book cards in front of you, or you can repeat after me. God, let your love shine through me like a foglight, so those who are lost, sick, and dying can find your love through me. Amen. There is a solution from the Big Book, page 17. The tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out on which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism. I've asked Melanie to read Appendix 2, Spiritual Experience. We read this because the main purpose of the 12 steps is to have one, so it is kind of important to know what one is.
Oh, great, the font's small. Super.
All right, Melanie Alcoholic.
Hi, Melanie.
The term spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which upon careful reading shows that the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many different forms. Yet it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences must be in the nature of sudden and spectacular upheavals. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Though it was not our intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. Among our rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations, though frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experiences are what the psychologist William James calls the educational variety, because they develop slowly over a period of time. Quite often, friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference long before he is himself. He finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life, that such a change could hardly have been brought about by himself alone. What often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. With few exceptions, our members find that they have tapped an unsuspected inner resource, which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves. We're not done. Okay, so most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most emphatically, Perfect, okay. We wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. There is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation. Herbert Spencer.
And now, for the next week in her session, Marion.
Hello, I'm Marion. I'm a recovered alcoholic. Good to be here and good to be sober and good to be back on this Thursday night again. And thanks for the group for having me. How you guys doing? God, I'm looking at... I got to spend the day home today. It was kind of nice. I've been kind of running, and was in Kentucky last weekend with Peter. We got to do a little 12-step weekend, and the week before I was in Washington, and just felt like I was going with all these motors, just going, and it just felt so good to be home today. I'm just blessed to be able to take that opportunity and spend a lot of time with God today, and actually sat. And this is kind of fits in, I guess, with amends, because it's like even making amends to yourself, you know? It's like we get busy in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and one of the things I live by, to whom much is given, much is expected, it is in the Bible, folks. And I live a life of service. I do take some time for myself, but not always. It's like usually a manicure or something like that. But really just that time to just slow down enough. I found myself at my dining room table sitting and having breakfast with the doors open and the wind coming in and the birds singing. And it just felt like this luxury today, like this absolute luxury. I had this bananas. I sliced them up and I had a little bowl of oatmeal and some juice. And it was just, it turned into just this you know, this gratitude and just this, my heart was full and just simple. How many of us take time to eat breakfast at the table? How many of us do that, you know? And it's like part of our process of growing in this program is learning some ways to take care of ourselves, just even in just a tiny moment like that. And so that's what I did with my day today and reflected on the week and some of the people I work with and the kids in our program and the women I sponsor and the work that they're doing. And, you know, so my heart is full tonight. And I'll tell you what, I got to do this series with Peter this weekend in Kentucky, and some of that can be, you know, like oftentimes we can look at, you know, we're sober and we carry a message, and some of us can look at, oh, wow, isn't it so great to be able to do that? And yeah, it is an honor and it's a privilege. But at the same time, like, Peter's done this for years, and I was just, and I mean, I just sat there by Saturday night. I was like this, you know, they wanted us to go out to dinner, and when we had been, you know, we did our talks Friday night, and then we were up again at 8 o'clock in the morning to go through the steps on Saturday until 6, and then there was a lunch break, and at the lunch break, people are asking questions and you know, wanting, you know, your experience, strength, and hope on different things, and by Saturday night, I was just like, he's still ready to go, and I'm conked out, man. I was like, there was nothing left. So I felt anyway, and so I have a respect for people who stand at these podiums that share their experience, strength, and hope to be used of God in this way, and it's certainly nothing that, you know, I signed up for. You know, when clearly I came here November 11th, 1989. I have an amazing sponsor that I adore, and I sponsor a lot of women, and I'm busy in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's a life I never expected to have. And even tonight, you know, I'm thinking about, so far we've got up to step 7, and that's where we closed last week, and so we're going to be talking about 8 and 9 tonight. And there's, to me, this is just me personal, in my life, like 8 and 9 for me are the hardest to talk about. Because what there is still a piece of us that, you know, my sponsor says a quick prayer. She goes, please God, her quick prayer is, please God, don't let me suck, you know? And we'll do long, lengthy prayers and, you know, whatever. But, you know, so it's not only that, it just goes to show that with 27 years of sobriety, with a lot of work in this book and taking lots of women through these steps, it's still like when we get to 8 and 9, there's just this level of humility that has to be here. There has to be this level of courage that has to be here. And for me, like, you guys, anybody who's been here the last 7 weeks, you know, I tell it like it is. I'm not going to show, I mean, there's nothing in me that, you know, like all day, I'm like, okay, what's my knowledge bombs? I'm going to talk on this. And, you know, I can think about the amends that I've made in my first time through this work and many times through this work and how gut-wrenching and hard they were and going to face my enemies when I didn't want to face my enemies. And, you know, the big book, the holy book talks about, you know, it's easier to go to a friend than it is to go to an enemy, you know, and us being able to, you know, take the bit in our teeth and go to those people and be able to humble ourselves and at whatever cost. You know, our big book talks about at the beginning, we were willing to go to any length and that we would stop at nothing to be free of alcohol. And, you know, a lot of times old timers can talk about, well, I just have a living problem. I just have a living problem. No, it still is about alcohol, guys. You know, I have to do whatever it takes in order to be okay in my skin. And, you know, I think for me personally too, you know, and some of us are like this, I don't know, you know, I feel like I work from behind a little bit where, you know, I wasn't raised with the silver spoon in my mouth and I didn't like who I was, and there was shame, and there was a lot of work I've had to do in my life in my recovery. A lot of work that I've had to do. But that doesn't mean, I mean, God put that in me to do it. God gave me this hunger to stay sober. God's done it in and for me, things I couldn't do for myself, giving me the willingness, giving me courage, giving me the right people to surround me to go through this work. And when we get into step 8 and 9 and we read them at open, you know, discussion meetings all the time, oh, let's just read the promises. Let's just read the promises. Well, this is the steps where we get to actually enter the fellowship, the sunlight of the Spirit. This is where we get to walk with God hand in hand. And anything that I'm not willing to clean up from my past, anything that I'm not willing to clean up from my past, anything that I'm not willing to face is going to separate me from my Creator. And when I am if I'm willing to hold on to, it says, our graver defects or whatever they are, if I'm willing to hold on to those things and I'm willing to compromise my relationship with my Creator, then chances are I can be one of those old timers that end up with a bottle of booze in my hand. I can. And I don't want to be willing. I don't want to be willing for anything to separate me from that power. And many times I've gone, you know, as I've gone through this work, every single solitary time I do a first step again, a powerlessness over whatever, or a second step where I'm practicing current agnosticism in my life, and areas I'm not willing to turn over to God, usually it's about my children, you know, it's like me playing God in their lives or whatever, you know, and God speaking to my heart, even about them, even from my recent trip, to be able to say, and this is, I just heard, you know, when I talk to you guys about this from our southern friend, you know, the thought that has a voice. And I had some concerns about my daughter the other day, and God just was like, this is crazy, but it's cool. It's my turn. It's my turn. You know, and the ways that I can still carry people's burdens, I can still try to fix it. I can still try to play God in my life. I can still try to overlook an amends that I need to make and say, oh, I can take care of that later. You know, and I don't want to live that way today. I don't want to live that way. I want to be the big book that some people don't get to see. And I did, that happened in my marriage. I was married 25 years to a practicing alcoholic. 15 of those years I was married, I was clean and sober. The first 10, I wasn't. The first 10 years I wasn't sober. And the last 15, I was. And you say, how do you do that? You do that by doing this work. I sponsor a woman that, She's married 50 years. 50 years to this man. They have children. They have grandchildren. They have great-grandchildren. And I've taken her through this body of work. She's in her 70s. She's had many relapses. And he's a drunk and all this stuff. And she had people breathing down her throat. You can't go back to him. You got to get a divorce. You can't be with him. And I said, you don't know my God. You don't know my God. You don't know that you can be like absolutely so safe and protected. And the big book talks about we can go to the most sordid places, safe and protected, recoil from it like a hot flame. And that was my life. And it was crazy many times. You know, my husband would get sober and then he wouldn't. And the longest time he ever did was 6 months, the whole time I was married, you know. But I stayed with my fellowship and I stayed in service and I stayed going to meetings and I stayed working these steps because I believed. I had a God that I believed that getting married was once and for all. I did. I believe that with my whole heart, no matter how crazy things were. But God did for me, you guys, what I could not do for myself. He did for me what I couldn't do for myself. I hit the rooms of Al-Anon. I worked the steps. I made amends for my past, you know, because guess what? No matter what, in somebody else's life, no matter how bad they've treated you or no matter what it is, and I think I said this to you guys last week or whatever. I don't even know. I can't remember. I'm old, a little bit old. But when we get that list from our fifth step, we get that list for our amends from our fifth step. That means there's somewhere in there that I'm at fault. Where did I set the ball rolling? Well, I know what that was today. Here I am, guts exposed, 8 and 9. The steps I don't like to stand in a podium and talk about. But I tried to play God. I tried to fix him. I tried to make that family what I wanted it to be. What I thought it should be. And I stayed and I stayed and I stayed. And it got uglier and harder and all those things. But when I turned and I looked at where I was at fault, guys, it was me trying to change the situation. Another way, I was practicing some current agnosticism in my life at that time. And you know, I can take this all the way back to the first time through the work. And the first time through the work was, you know, I was a mama who I loved and cherished and neglected and abused my children. And when my sponsor told me that, you know, I knew I loved them. I knew I loved them so, so much. And I cherished them. I cherished them. But when I didn't get up and make them breakfast and I didn't wash their clothes and I wasn't there to send them to bed at night because I was off doing whatever I was doing, I abused them and I neglected them. And when we have to find, you know, this is a fact finding. This is, guys, this is where we turn out to the world. This is where we go face our fellows. You know, in one through seven, I'm cleaning out. I'm getting all this garbage out of me and I'm getting clean and I'm going out to face the world. Okay, and there's many people in my life when, you know, those amends to my kids, I sat them down. They're 6, 7, and 8 years old. What can I do to make it right? Mommy, don't go to the bar anymore. Okay. Mommy, I'd like you to show up to my gymnastics thing or my, you know, Mom, I'd like you to just tuck me in at bed at night. You know, and my sponsor talks about this. You know, she's been sober a really long time, and she does this at a magnitude I can't even understand. And you know, she says this about the promises. You know, we will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. And sometimes for moms, that's a really hard thing to say. You know, I know that what God's done in me and through me, I can be an example to other women to help them forgive themselves. And I love that. Am I sniffling? It's going to happen. Thank you, Steve. You're awesome. I can be an example for other women, you know, and when it says that, you know, no matter how far down the scale we have come, we can see where our experience can benefit others. That's the gold. That's the gold. And I don't like to look back at my life then and look back and, you know, my son calling me at a bar and saying, you know, my husband putting my son on the phone to say, Mom, will you come home? Because he was trying any length he could for me to get sober. And he's thinking, oh, I'll just have Brandon call Mom. You know, and that was the night of my brother's wedding, and oh my God, it was crazy. We were at this place called the Coconut Grove, and I'm with my brother who lived under the bridge that I've told you all about, and we had this old Audi, and there was branches in the front of the car, and I was drunker than him, and I was always comparing myself to him. It's like, how did that happen? And the night of that wedding, I never showed up home, and my son had called me at the bar, and And I had this black velvet strapless dress on, and I fell down about 10 times, and I ripped it up the back, and I got a sweater out of my car and put it on, and I stayed out all night long. You see, it didn't matter. I couldn't, like I've talked about before, I couldn't. I would die for my children. I would die for them. Tonight, today, any moment of any day, I would have died for them. But I couldn't come home from the bar when my son's scared for me. I can't do that. Because I can't do that on my own power, guys. We can't do that on our own power. We can't. But I can tell you through the process of these steps, my children have a love for Alcoholics Anonymous. They love it. You know, they were little kids in the rooms of AA, and they'd show up and they'd go up to the coffee pot and they'd make their own little cup of coffee and add a bunch of sugar and some cream and sit down with mom, and they can drop the names of all those old timers that helped mom out and helped save their lives. And they were going to campouts with me with all those good AAs, and they were going to potlucks, and they were having, you know, one more tuna casserole from Kathy Downs, and oh my God, you know. And they were doing that stuff. And they got to see mom be sober, and they got to see mom be sober in action. And I got to show up at PTA, and I got to show up at gymnastics, and I got to tuck them in at night. And you know, I might, a lot of that stuff they don't remember, you know. When I went to treatment that one time, and if you're new here and you've never, I mean, treatment ain't the answer, but I was ready when I was ready. I had the gift of desperation that day, you know, and I only had to go once. And going away from them for 30 days to get my life together was the best thing I ever did in my life. And them coming for Thanksgiving at the treatment center to be with mom, you know. My husband never got this. He never supported the treatment. He never did any of that. And God bless him today. Here's another piece of that. Like I've told you, you know, through that whole process, through this process of amends, where did I set the ball rolling? My part. Where am I at fault, you know? And being able to, you know, part ways in a way that, with grace and dignity, and never dragging him into my relationship with my children. My sponsor taught me that. She goes, when you bring your kids into that stuff, you're making them adults. They're not kids anymore. And so I didn't. And so I lived that amends. And you know, And through the process of these steps and through the process of those amends, you know, I wish him well. I can tell you there's prayers that I practiced through that where it was like the sick man's prayer in 66 and 67 was golden for me when I could see that he was perhaps spiritually sick, just like me. Because see, what that does is that puts us at an even playing field. I'm sick. I tried to play God. Okay? And then in the freedom from bondage prayer in the back of the book, and I love that prayer and praying for that person every day for 2 weeks. And when you're getting ready to go out and do these amends, these are people from your fifth step. It's like, it's not always clear, like, where am I at fault? It's not always clear. And we can be so full of anger and so full of resentment when we go through that step and we get the defects of character removed by God's grace, or however God does what he does in us, because we don't have the power to change that. But when we have those people face to face and we start saying those prayers, and we can go to them as sick, it changes everything. When people know better, they do better. When I knew better, I did better. And the first time through, a couple amends that were crazy. I was working at a bookstore for the college. Oh my God, anonymity if this is in Bellingham, but whatever. This guy dropped $100 on the ground in the college bookstore I was working at, $100 on the floor, and I found it. And I put it in my pocket, and I ended up getting fired from that job, and I could never figure out why. I was, like, really ticked off about it, because I really loved that job, and I really wanted to have it. But as it turned out, you know, I found this $100, and I put it in my pocket, and then I spent 2 hours helping everybody look for it. You know, and going through the steps the first time and going face to face with my boss, and it says to make it hard on me, and I had to go face to face. Oh, couldn't I just make a phone call? Couldn't I just send a letter? No, I need to be hard on me, you know, and to be able to face that man, face that old boss. Thank you for taking the time. It's convenient for you. And running all this by your sponsor rather than just running out and making amends is a really good idea too. But being able to sit before him, list the things that I had done wrong, including the money, having money in hand to give him. Is there anything that I left out that you have to say to me? And that was showing up late, showing up drunk, showing up irresponsible. We had to work extra hours, you know, like all that stuff. And us being able as alcoholics to be able to have the courage, have the strength to be able to stand there and take whatever they have to say. And you know what? That man didn't care whether I was sober or not. He was burnt up. And you know what? I did what I was supposed to do. I did the amends and I left. And you know, I'm the kind of person where, you know, I was a little bit hurt. I was like, I'm trying to make this right. I'm trying to do this right. In high school, I took this girl's car and blamed it on somebody else. I was drunk in the middle of the day and I didn't know how to drive a stick, and it had a stick, and apparently I was drunk and I burned up the stick, and it was her new car. And I blamed this other girl who wasn't even around, and that was another one that didn't go over good. You know, if I don't see you again as long as I live, I'm going to be okay. Talk to you about the bad ones. They might not sound like a big deal to you, but to me they are. You know, and I can pray for those people, and I can wish the best in those situations. And then I've had people that wrap their arms around me and thank God. I'm so glad you're here. Thank you so much. You know, I'm glad you're on the right track now, you know. And these are the things that block us from God. The things that block us from God. Where's I gonna go here? So we clean house with the family, asking each morning in meditation that our Creator show us the way of patience, tolerance, kindness, and love. See, my job and what my teachers taught me is when we set aside the actions of others, when we set aside anything that somebody else has done and we see where we're at fault, you know, I got to learn how to be the best daughter I could be. Doesn't matter what mom and dad are like. How can I be the best daughter I can be? How can I be the best wife I can be? How can I be the best mom I can be? See, it doesn't matter what they're doing, guys. It matters what I'm doing. It matters what I'm doing. Because I would always have this expectation, well, you know, I gave you money. I showed up for you. Look at me. Nobody's doing anything for me. You know, that's what the alcoholic pride wants to say. That's what our alcoholic ego wants to say. But I'm the one giving. You know, and I did that in my alcoholism. I was always like all about doing stuff for you so that I could feel better about me. You know, and this isn't what it's about. It's about me showing up as a friend. It's about me showing up in all those other ways in my life. You know, and part of that, you know, I've talked about my father, and, you know, my mom passed when I was in my disease. And part of my amends that my sponsor had me do was my father was elderly. My father He was an alcoholic till the day he died. Till the day he died. He was a World War II veteran, and we just, you know, Pearl Harbor Day was just the other day, and, you know, I would go to, and my dad was alone. You know, he's alone, he's elderly, he never remarried. He, even though they fought like cats and dogs, he was just like all about, I'll never get married again. He had a little girlfriend named Hazel, and, you know, and part of like this grace gift I got to have, because during my, you know, I was busy in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I was busy raising my children, I'm working, I've got, you know, all this stuff going on. And my dad was lonely, you know, he's lonely and he's elderly. And he, I started showing up at his house after work. And he had one of those, you know, those old-fashioned coffee pots with the little percolator on top. And you youngins have probably never even seen those. But they use them on campfires nowadays. The metal coffee pot with the handle, you put it on the, you actually put it on the burner of a stove or oven or whatever. And 5:30, I'm going to Dad's and I'm having coffee. And I showed up for coffee. And, you know, that was my, what my sponsor called was, that was how I made amends to my mom. That's how I made amends to my mom, is through my dad. You know, showing up in his life, being present for him. And that was awesome. That was really, really awesome. And I feel sentimental about him for a minute, so I'm going to stay on this. He always wanted to go back to Pearl Harbor because he was there when everything was going on. And I was like, Dad, I'll take you. I'll take you. And so him and me, we bought tickets, and we were going to go to, We were going to go to the Arizona, and we were going to spend 5 days in Hawaii, just him and me. And I was so excited. And my dad's an alcoholic, guys. He's an alcoholic. And he's an old man, and he's going to Pearl Harbor. And the day came, and he was trying to pull out. He wasn't going to go. And I was like, Dad, come on, let's do this. I took him to the liquor store. This is an old-timer drinker. Opens the glove box, take him to the liquor store, get him a pint of whiskey, Potter's. Steph knows that. And he sets up his little wet bar in my car on the way to the airport. And so I take my dad down to the airport, and they give him a wheelchair to get through. And I'm telling him, I'm taking him to Pearl Harbor. This is a World War II veteran. And they rolled out the red car. Let's get you through here, Mr. Weston, you know. We get on the airplane, and the pilot came out and said hello to him. And nice to meet you, Mr. Weston. And one of the greatest trips of my entire life. But that trip in 5 days, my dad went through 5 pints of whiskey. And when we got there, we went to the hotel. He was going up the escalator, and he fell back on his head. And I was so scared and stubborn alcoholic, refusing to go to the hospital. He wasn't going to do it. And I was like, no, come on, Dad. And he sat and he drank. And from 3,000 miles away, my AA, my sponsor, no, you got to take care of yourself. You get your butt to a meeting. I found this group. They were the happy hour group, and they met under this banyan tree down on the beach in Oahu, and this group was beautiful, and they just walked me through the whole situation. I was scared for my father's life. I got him down to Pearl Harbor and back home, and that's part of my amends to my father, is just showing up. And if it wasn't for the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, like I said, you know, there was no temptation for me in that whiskey. There was no temptation. I wanted to show up for my dad. I wanted to give him the trip of a lifetime. And you know what? That was a year before he passed. And I hope this sounds really solemn, but it's really on my heart, guys. It's how we get to show up for people in our life. It's how we get to finish well. And, you know, when he passed, I mean, Steph was in the room, the whole family was in the room, and I got to be there right by his side. And I got to face that fear, and I got to be by my dad's side. I got to show up and be the best daughter I could be. And you know, if you're here and you've got a mom and you got a dad and you've got, you know, stuff between you, make that stuff right. Do this work. Make it right. Make it right. You know, our book talks about, you know, we're like, the alcoholic is like, you know, the guy in the storm cellar comes out and ain't a grand, the wind stopped blowing. It's not enough just to not drink, guys. You know, people are only going to pat you on the back for so long. Great, you're sober. But really, how sober are you? How are you treating your fellow man? How are you showing up for other people in your life? How am I showing up for other people in my life? God, I got Kleenex everywhere. I'm going to get there. Oh, where is that going? Spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. Unless one's family expresses a desire to live upon spiritual principles, we think we ought not to urge them. We shouldn't talk incessantly about spiritual matters. You know, I could have tried cramming this down everybody's throat. You know, I could have. And so many times we just have to look at, you know, we might be the only big book our family sees. We might be the only big book they ever see. You know, we can go all day long like, oh, yay, I made it to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. Most of us don't make it here. You know, lots of alcoholics unfortunately don't make it to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous to hear the message, to carry the message, to be the message, to be the message. And, you know, it's not just about having a head full of knowledge. It's about having a heart full of knowledge. They will change in time. Our behavior will convince them more than our words. Our behavior will convince them more than our words. You know, my old friend Ralph used to say this all the time. When you sober up a horse thief, what do you got? A sober horse thief. I don't want to live like a sober horse thief anymore. I don't want to be that. We must remember that 10 or 20 years of drunkenness would make a skeptic out of anyone. Yeah, 10 or 20 years of drunkenness, the breathalyzer kiss, the eyeball check, you know, all the things that people do in our lives. There may be some wrongs we can never fully right. That's how I feel about being a mom. You know, any way that I didn't show up for them. We don't worry about them if we can honestly say to ourselves that we would right them if we could. Some people can't be seen. Hey, mom, anybody. We send them an honest letter, and there we may be a valid reason for postponement in some cases. But we don't delay if it can be avoided. We should be sensible, tactful. Okay, are these words that ever apply to an alcoholic or an addict? I'm sorry. We should be sensible. How many would use that word to describe themselves and their disease? I'm sensible. I'm sorry. Never. Right? Tactful certainly wasn't a word we'd ever use to describe ourselves, right? Considerate and humble. Those are some things I want in my life. I want to be, you know, I would like somebody to meet me and say, you know, that Marion, she's pretty sensible. Nobody will ever use that word to still describe me. I'm a little out there, right? Or whatever. Tactful, I like to say that, considerable and humble without being servile or scraping. As God's people, and I love this too, because some of these amends, when you go out to make them, and it says, you know, the Bible says, like I said, you know, it's easier to love our friends than to go face our enemies. It just is. It's easier. But this is what it says. As God's people, we stand on our feet. We don't crawl before anyone. So we go out with this honest effort, and we go prepared with perhaps a list of the people we're going to make amends. We run it by our sponsor. We work it out with our sponsor, because perhaps we don't have the right. Hey, I've had a couple different situations that I know of, and I'm going to say this in such a general way. I know of some people where one of the spouses is not in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and the other is, and that person kind of had an emotional affair with somebody in Alcoholics Anonymous and decided to go tell their spouse. Well, this person is not a friend of ours and really didn't end up being quite a friend of ours. So perhaps that amends should have been run by the person's sponsor, perhaps. And maybe some things are going to be avoided. And there's a whole lot in the book when it talks about how to handle those situations. 8 and 9 has a whole lot of work, a whole lot of writing on this, of how to make financial amends, relationship amends, has a whole lot in here. So I'm not going to dig a lot into that. Another one was a woman I sponsored about 20 years ago who she decided she had had an abortion, and she had made a list of these people that she had harmed, and she went to her mother and told her mother about it, who knew nothing about it. You know, and I guess sometimes that is really important. Say, if God puts that in you to help other women in that situation, but sometimes the hurt that it can cause, like from this girl 20 years ago, I mean, it was really hard that it happened to her mom. It caused more hurt for her mom. To relieve herself, she said it, you know, and perhaps that could have been done in a better way. I don't know. I'm not saying it as a judgment thing, but just to remember, you know, and my kids have done this plenty of times with me. They tell me stories of the crap they did when I thought they were upstairs sleeping. And they'll just, it's like, oh my God, I don't want to know that they did that, you know, things like that. So anyway, hard on ourselves, easy on others. That's kind of the way to look at it. If we're painstaking, if we've taken some pain at this phase of our development, we'll be amazed before we are halfway through. We're going to know a new freedom, a new happiness. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. I don't regret it. I don't regret it. I don't regret it. Comprehend the word serenity. We will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experiences can benefit others. Feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things. Oh boy, that still wants to creep back so many times. But and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people, of economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations that used to baffle us. The voice of God. We'll suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises? We think not. They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them. And I'm done. Thanks.
Let's thank the speaker one more time, please. And now Fred with the secretary's report.
Hi, my name is Fred, and I'm your recovered alcoholic secretary. In keeping with the seven tradition, which states that every group shall be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions, the baskets are now going around. I've asked Bradford to read the recovered statement. We read this notice to explain why many people in this group identify as recovered rather than recovering, and what it exactly means to be a recovered alcoholic.
Bradford, alcoholic addict. Recovered. We are not cured of alcoholism. Recovered, but not cured. That presents a conflict to some alcoholics. If we are cured, we would be able to drink responsibly. No, we are not cured. The allergic reaction to alcohol will remain with us for our lifetime, but we have been restored to sanity. That was the problem. The main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind, rather than in the body. We are now sane where alcohol is concerned. Consequently, we have recovered. Thank you.
...1940-style Big Book sponsorship, from the fourth to the second edition, Alcoholics Anonymous. Of alcoholics who came to AA and really tried, 50% got sobered at once and remained that way, 25% sobered up after some relapses, and among the remainder, those who stayed on with AA showed improvement. But we've seen, felt, come to believe in experiences that God has not changed over time, and neither should the sacred approach back to his loving arms. The statistics above suggest a 75% success rate. Can I have a show of hands of recovered alcoholics? Is there anyone in need of a sponsor tonight? Please raise your hand. Please join us Monday nights. We have a Big Book study meeting in the other room over here where the Big Book comes alive. Fellowship is at 6:30 and the meeting itself starts at 7:15. We have large print Big Book and Big Book dictionaries for sale. We meet every Thursday, starting promptly at 8:15, and we ask that you be courteous and ready to begin at the sound of the bells. Thank you, and I'll see you next week.
So tonight we have the session and all other podcasts online for free at alcoholicsandgod.org. I'd like to invite everyone to our Monday night Big Book study, and those who wish to thank tonight's speaker, please line up down the center aisle. Let's close with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those
See you on Monday or next Thursday. Godspeed. Me.
Oh, when you're smiling, when you're smiling, the whole world smiles with you, baby, baby. Yes, when you're laughing. When you're laughing, yes, the sun comes shining through. But when you're crying, you bring on the rain. So stop your sighing, baby, and be happy again. Yes, and keep on smiling. Keep on smiling, baby. And I hope